evening and welcome to episode 73 of the Deck Tees podcast, brought to you by GatheringMagic.com. My name is Aaron Campbell. My guest tonight is a father, he's a husband, and he is a well-known artist for Magic the Gathering, like such pieces as Burning Earth, Avatar of Woe, Ikarid, and more. And he's a little bit naughty from what I hear. RK Post.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I don't know about naughty, but okay, I'm good.
I've seen your tattoo, sir.
Oh, there's just skulls.
Just skulls, you know, like just you do.
None of them are, how do I put it? Naughty, but just skulls.
Well, I seem to recall in preparation for this interview, I read the 7 questions that my friend MJ Scott asked you on her interview of you.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Oh, and the ripped ear and the stealing of the little shampoos from hotels.
Yes.
Yeah, you are trouble, my friend.
Oh, thank you.
I was especially intrigued when you were talking about your love for the art for Unmask.
Yes.
And you had made a comment of the fact that it's basically a man portraying a woman, which you called a really good time in a basket.
Yes.
And I'm transgender, so I was like, ah, I get it. Yes.
Well, yeah, it's more cross-dressing than it is transgender, because it's just Volrath in disguise, and then he's a guy again, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not the full commitment. It's just a disguise.
But I really appreciated the comments. It was very tongue-in-cheek, and I was like, I like him.
Thanks.
So thank you so much for coming on the show.
It's absolutely my pleasure.
Absolutely. So to get things started, your first name is Randall, Randy?
Yes.
And what's the K stand for?
Usually I just make people guess. So if I gave it to you, then the mystery would be gone.
I think you said something about the fact that it rhymes with a body part.
Yes.
Okay, so I came up with a couple guesses, so okay. Correct me if I'm wrong. Kai?
No.
Okay. Kelly?
No.
Kajina?
No.
Damn.
Everybody usually guesses Keenest, but no, that's
not. That's a good one. I didn't even think of that. Yeah, I kept thinking, all I could think of was I, so I thought of Kai, and then I thought Belly for Kelly, but then I kept going through, I'm like, Kako, Karm, Kipple? Case? No, I can
even throw another monkey wrench into it if you want.
Please do.
Another hint. It's monosyllabic.
Oh, Jesus. That's too much thought for a Thursday.
I know. Exactly.
Well, I'm sure I will think of it someday, or I'll just have to get you drunk and you'll tell me.
Oh, sure.
So I want to talk about you and talk about your beginnings, because the bio on your website, RK, states that you grew up on a farm in Illinois.
I did.
And tell me about your childhood and how you first discovered that you like to draw.
Well, it was kind of a secluded childhood. It was a very small farm. It was 5 acres, but we had a couple horses, chickens, ducks, geese, that kind of stuff like that. Dogs, cats, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And it was really in the middle of nowhere. So, I mean, you kind of had to, you know, make things up as you go. So, you know, I like to explore, go around, do things like that. And then, you know, especially in the winter months, you're not really going outside all that much. So that was a great time just to kind of sit and doodle and draw. And I always had an interest in it since I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. So it cultivated very easily in that kind of environment.
Mm-hmm. Were parents supportive of that?
Yeah, I would say so. I think my mom took art in college, and my dad did these little head doodles and things like that. They're just absolutely fascinated by. Mm-hmm.
Did you start drawing things around you? Like, were you drawing animals and barnyard scenes, or were you thinking a little bigger?
No, dinosaurs.
Were the dinosaurs in a barn?
Well, now that you say that, my dad has a shed today. They moved from the original farm to, you know, a smaller farm, but my dad still has some of my original drawings up in the shed. And yeah, some of those are the dinosaurs and stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah, still out there.
Were you always interested in fantasy type things?
Yeah, I think that's, yeah. Yeah, because I still have some of those old drawings and things like that. And I mean, there was like a comic book stint there where, you know, it was superheroes and stuff like that. But yeah, no, fantasy always kind of held strong, whether it was, you know, fantastic creatures or, you know, armor and, I don't know, all the kind of fun stuff like that. I mean, I always really loved that kind of stuff, because it was kind of an escape, and it took you away from where you were, and you know, you got to use your full imagination to kind of create a universe of your own. Mm-hmm.
But somewhere down the line, you decided you wanted to be a veterinarian. Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you go from veterinarian to artist?
Okay. So when I was in high school, I didn't take any art class whatsoever. It was all math, science, and you know, I was fairly decent at it, and I had the notion I was going to be a veterinarian. So I actually went to take pre-veterinary medicine at the collegiate level, and I got a solid like B average first semester. And thank goodness I was just smart enough to realize that's just not good enough to get into vet school. It's really hard to get into vet school.
Really?
So it is. It's worse getting into vet school than it is into medical school because there's so few vet schools out there, and there's just a really high demand for it.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah. Well, luckily I had a small notion about that, so I mean that's good. So I decided, well, you know what? I like doing this art thing, so what I'll do is I'll take graphic design because, well, that's one way you can do art and actually make a decent living, right? Because, I mean, who the heck makes money doing illustration? I have no notion of that whatsoever. So I got all the way through my junior year, transferring school somewhere in between there, and, going to the state school that had the best, you know, VizCom program, and I took that all the way through my junior year, and then at some point, I go, oh, my God, I just hate this. So I happened to be taking illustration at the time. It's kind of like a little side thing because some of the courses overlapped and, you know, would have totally applied to your graphic design thing. But I loved illustration so much more.
Yeah.
But I never really thought of it as like, you know, some way to make an honest living one day. So I just said, you know, what the hell? I'm just going to take illustration. And it was the last semester I was there that I took a professor that a few other magic artists have had in the past, and he was doing like comics and, you know, game work and stuff like that. It's like, wow, this is actually pretty darn cool. He made the right introductions, and I started freelancing before I actually got out of school.
That's very interesting. Now, there was something about you that I noticed in your bio that you had sort of corrected me on. In
sure.
Several places, you're listed as being self-taught. So to get things, to sort of start off, what does that mean exactly?
Well, self-taught. Well, like a lot of the core basic stuff, you know, I taught myself, you know, when I was growing up, when I was in high school, you know, I drew at home. My grandparents actually got my first set of like technical pens. So when I was inking stuff like that, I was just looking at comics and stuff like that and just kind of imitating what I saw. And I just kind of taught myself how to do all that kind of stuff. So when I took that into the illustration program, it's like I was already kind of doing this beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like a big stretch for me. And I think that's why I really liked illustration because it's like stuff I already kind of knew. But also, you know, when I was taking the courses, you know, one painting course I took was like airbrush, which, you know, I have absolutely no use for these days. And, you know, the oil courses that you took were, you know, really introductory and it was more geared towards like a fine artist, not an illustrator. And then in the illustration courses, you paint with acrylics sometimes, and then you would also do some color pencil pieces on canvas and paper and stuff like that. So when I got out of school, that's when I taught my, you know, sat down and said, you know, I need to learn to use oils and stuff like that because that's what the cool fantasy guys are doing. And also, you know, Photoshop, I just really wasn't available at the time. So I taught myself that later on as well.
Mm-hmm. But you said that you did take some classes. I know you were hesitant. You said that self-taught was more of a subjective thing.
It is. I mean, to actually give me a direction and sort of maybe give me a purpose,
mm-hmm.
That the courses were absolutely perfect for that. I mean, if I was just left to my own devices, I don't, you know what the heck I would do or who the heck I would talk to or how the heck I'd even get started. So honestly, I didn't even think you can make a career out of this silly thing. And you know, here I am 20 years later, making a career out of this silly thing.
Do you think that being self-taught or close to self-taught gave you more advantages or disadvantages as you were just starting out? Let's say you're trying to get your foot in the door and people ask you for your credentials or they ask you what you've done and you're like, oh, well, I taught myself. Was it more, you know, were people more interested?
No? I do have a bachelor's degree.
Okay.
Let me clear that up. So I do have a bachelor's degree. So when I, you know, I was working in video games and stuff like that, bachelor's degree absolutely helped because, you know, people, oh my God, that guy's got a degree. He must know something. Let's let him in the door. Plus he's also got a portfolio. It would totally work for what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So I won't say it's hurt me, but I know there's people out there that have absolutely no schooling, but just absolute, you know, tons and tons of skill. So, you can absolutely get away with, you know, getting a career in this silly thing and actually having no schooling whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Is that something you would recommend for people that are looking to get into this?
No schooling whatsoever? It's tough. There's a lot more venues now than there was when I was starting. So, you can go to like concept.org and other sites and things like that, and totally get a resource base there, which, when I was kind of coming into it, didn't exist. So,
Do you think that if those avenues were available for you then, that you would have maybe held off on school and just devoted yourself to the art, or are you happy with the way it all turned out?
it turned out well for me in the end. I don't know, because I kind of made some connections in school that were helpful, so I couldn't honestly say. But I don't know. I don't know.
I stumped RK Post.
You did, absolutely did.
So tell me how you got hooked up with Wizards of the Coast.
Okay, well, the first contact I made with the professor I had in college was TSR, the company that made D&D. So I started freelance. That was the first freelance job I ever had. And it was if you really want to dig it up, there's an RPG out there called Red Steel. That was my first paying job. It's not anything I'm absolutely proud of, but it's out there somewhere.
Why is that?
Well, it's just the truth about art is, the more work you put into it, the better you're going to get. So, I was still young, I was still green. I was banging out 70 pieces in one semester, which, actually just shocked me. So I was thinking, well, at the time I thought they looked great, but then, now with a lot more time and experience, I look back and it's like, oh my God, they're just absolutely not great. And not what I want to, define my career upon. So
I'm kind of the same way with my podcast. Like I have this thing where I do Throwback Thursday on Twitter, where I'll link to an old episode of my show, and I can't listen to them. And I know people will. And I know the other day one of my friends had tried texting me, and he was like, "What was that joke you made on that one show with that one guy?" And he's like, "Could you listen and find it for me?" And I was like, "How about I just give you the link and you listen, and I can't do this." And yeah, I can't. It's torture.
It's absolutely terrible, isn't it? But it's also nice to go back and look that we need to realize that we're actually growing
Yes.
and adapting and becoming better and better at what we do. So I
Absolutely.
guess you need those earlier experiences to kind of help you define who you're going to be, down the road. So, eh.
So Red Steel.
Red Steel, yes.
And then
It's
how did
it
that
was
lead to Wizards?
oh, okay. So eventually, enough freelance jobs and the fact that TSR was struggling just a bit got me into a staff position there because I was within driving range and they didn't have to pay a whole heck of a lot for me, and they needed staff illustrators to kind of get the product out. There were a couple of times there where we were just kind of doing everything, interiors, covers, and all that kind of stuff like that. So it was a great, like, paid experience to actually sit there and learn how to use oils and experiment and play and do all that kind of fun stuff that kind of defined who I am today. So as a part of TSR, given a few months, Wizards of the Coast comes in and they buy the company. So at that point, and mind you, maybe a year or two beforehand, I did approach Wizards like a Gen Con, and I gave them a portfolio, and I didn't get any work from it, which is fine, because probably looking back, it'd probably be some of the most scariest work I've ever seen in my life anyway. So I contacted the art director and I said I would like to do some magic art. And they said great.
Interesting. So walk me through how my magic sausage gets made. How does it go from being just an idea to the art that I'm looking at on a card?
Well, it goes through internally at Wizards of the Coast, it goes through a process where they actually spend a few months working on an artistic style guide. So they can give something to the artists all across the world there, because essentially we're just all freelance anyway. Something to look at and kind of keep it all consistent and, making sure, say, like your Theros art fits Theros and not something else, like Ravnica or something like that. And once that's all nailed down and R&D has its time to kind of, figure out what the cards are and what they're going to do, the art team kind of, I guess puts together a short paragraph artistically of how that card and how that mechanic's going to look, and how it kind of fits in the world and how it kind of fits into the story. So at that point, then they have all their art descriptions together, and then they contact the artist, see how many pieces you're available for, and then they'll just, you know, randomly give you an assignment. I mean, sometimes you get a little pigeonholed, you know, because you do have your strengths, you do have your weaknesses. And at that point, you get your art assignment, you get your art style guide, and then you take it, and you do a sketch, submit the sketch. At that point, they can tell you if you're just, you know, you're right on the money or you're totally off base. Mm-hmm. They, you know, do your first round of changes and corrections there. And usually that's kind of where the big ones would happen. And then you would take it to a finished piece, submit that, and then, you know, go for another quick review. But, you know, by that point, a lot of the basic stuff's kind of hammered out. And they give you notes about color and stuff like that, too, also when you're submitting the sketch. You know, be aware you wanted to not do this or do that or whatever. And now that's pretty much it. But we do these assignments almost like a year ahead of time.
Really?
Yeah. So there's like a whole heck of a lot we just have to stay quiet about for a very, very, very long time. Granted, I don't know that much, so don't think I do.
So I have a quick question. So you had mentioned that they give you the little blurb that sort of gets you started and inspires you. Do they give that blurb to multiple people, like sort of like a competition, and whoever comes back with the best piece they keep, or do they decide that you alone are going to draw that piece?
I don't know. I guess that would be kind of wasteful if they did it that way.
Okay.
No, it's just you alone. You do that piece unless you just totally flub it up and then they give it to somebody else.
Interesting. Do you work well in that kind of collaborative situation where you're going back and forth like that? Or do you wish you know, it was more freeing and you just sort of do what you want to do?
No, that works well because you have to understand that Wizards of the Coast is a client and you do want to meet the needs that they're looking for. You do want to make them happy. So, I mean, if you're doing this kind of work anyway, you always understand that you're always trying to please somebody else and not necessarily just yourself, but pleasing yourself, you know, is, you know, a great sidebar, I guess.
Absolutely. Which of your magic pieces would you say that you're the most proud of?
How many?
Feel free.
Well, a mask is the one that I think I'm most happy with. It just fought me, you know, to the nth degree when I was starting to put it together, but then eventually it just came together. And one of the best pieces I've done. It was a nice big 18x24 painting, and I put texture in the background, and just kind of came together all that, you know, really, really well. That piece was from Arcadian Masks, and I think it was from the main set of the block. And then I was always kind of fond of like Night of Dusk from 10th edition. Mm-hmm.
Is it true that Angel of Retribution was modeled after your wife?
Ex-wife.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, my goodness. No, I didn't know that.
No.
Are there any that you feel like you could have done better? Or maybe you look back on and you're like, not my best.
It's odd that you say that. So I've been looking at Morphling lately because I made a larger size print of it. Mm-hmm. And Morphling originally was just a very tiny painting. It was like 6x8. It was really small. So when you look, say, like on a mask, it's 18x24. It's big and it's beautiful and you want to kind of show it in its full glory. And, you know, Morphling is just this tiny little thing that, you know, wasn't meant to be impressive. And it was like earlier on when I started doing magic art and I had little inclination that, you know, there'd be a second life for this darn thing or, you know, be a really good card to begin with. So I've actually been kind of reworking a little bit recently.
Really?
Yeah, it was especially the scan that they took of it was a little bit on the rough side. Mm-hmm. So I've been kind of cleaning up some of that stuff. I can't say that I'm going through and just totally repainting it. I'm not. I'm keeping the original integrity of it. But see, like the skin tones and things, I'm kind of smoothing out a little bit. There's a bit of roughness in there. And then there's some lights and darks that I've been kind of pushing and shoving. So, I mean, the original piece is still there. It's just cleaned up, I think, and just a little bit prettier.
Go back a little bit because you had mentioned Unmask. If you don't mind me asking, sure. What was it about Unmask that they might have fought you on, or why was that so difficult?
Oh, they didn't fight me on.
Oh,
the piece itself was fighting me. So, like when I was trying to mount the paper to Mace Knight and stuff like that, it just wasn't working well. It was kind of coming up or something, and I had to remount it, or I don't know. It was just silly things like that. It was just when I saw the description, I absolutely knew what I wanted to do. And I think I held really close to what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. But along the way, there were, you know, like little steps and missteps that, you know, kind of like, and then, you know, I go back and kind of rework a little bit. And then it eventually just kind of all came together, like right towards the end, I would say.
Are there any cars that you wish you'd been commissioned to do? Or like, let's say you see a car and you really like what it does and you think, I could have done, and not that the artist who did it did poorly, but just one where you're like, God, I really could have killed that. I really could have brought something fresh to that.
I don't know if I would say absolutely anything fresh to it, but there's a couple that kind of get pointed out every once in a while. It's like, yeah, that'd be kind of cool if I would have done those, like Etherling or Thornling, because I did Morphling and Torchling, the red and blue. So doing the others would have been kind of cool.
I immediately thought of you when I saw Etherling, because I know Etherling, when the card first came out, people were dreading it for the reasons they dreaded Morphling. And I thought, oh God, it would have been so great if he came back for that, and that would have really solidified that as the next Morphling. That would have been awesome.
Pretty much. I mean, that was kind of my thought too, but that was pretty much it. I mean, you really have no control over what they give you. You're kind of thankful that you're doing work for the cards anyway, because I absolutely love doing it, so.
Were there any assignments you had that stumped you, or like they sent you the description and you're like, I have no idea what to do for this?
Oh, there's a lot of them there like that. You have to kind of, sit on it for a bit and try to come up with the best thing that you can. There's, like some that I've done multiple sketches for to kind of figure out where the heck I was going with it. But, if you're working a really small thumbnail size, it's pretty easy to kind of get some of that basic stuff kind of worked out anyway before you actually take it to a, like a final sketch or anything.
Now, you also had a hand in some other games. I know we talked about the term designing being sort of a loose term and that wasn't necessarily what you had done, but a game comes to mind called Alternity. How did you get
Yes.
involved with that?
Well, that was also back in the time when I was with TSR, and budgets were a little tight. So at the time when I was brought on, Alternia was like a new thing, and I was put onto the project. So I did a lot of the concept art for the game, and then when it came to painting covers and stuff like that, doing interior art for like the core rule book and the the player's guide or whatever. It naturally fell on me because, I was the guy who kind of spearheaded the look and feel of it. And, they didn't really have a lot of the funds they needed to kind of bring in, a lot of freelancers and stuff like that. So we did a lot of that stuff in-house.
So how was doing all that stuff for the game different than the normal work that you do, where it's just commissions and things like that?
Well, you actually go in, you have a 9-to-5 job. So
Do you
it's.
like that?
I do. And at the moment, I don't have something like that. So, I mean, I've been kind of doing that mostly for most of my career, where I had like a studio job somewhere, whether it be with a video game company or something. And I do, because it's a steady, it's a 9-to-5 thing, and you generally just kind of do your work and you go home, and then you can, do more freelance on other things if you want, or just, put it out of your mind until you get back to work the next day.
Yeah, the
And
reason.
then,
Oh, sorry.
I was going to say, also, the benefits are usually pretty good too.
It's interesting because I have a couple of friends who are artists and they are opposed to the 9-to-5 thing because they feel like it stifles their creativity. And they feel like if they don't have that, they can just sort of create when they want to. And then when they don't want to create, they don't. And they just feel a lot more free that way.
That there is that aspect, but then, also when you're a freelancer, you don't always have the option of just taking time off. You have deadlines. You gotta do what you gotta do, you know what I'm saying? So you don't really get the option of saying, oh, I want to take it this afternoon off. But no, I have something due tomorrow. I can't take the afternoon off. But if you look at a 9-to-5, it's essentially the same thing, but it's a bit more structured. You have, like a steady flow of work, and sometimes you're just working on that bigger project that it's just a heck of a lot of fun anyway. So, there was never any dread to it. Back in the early days of freelancing, I was one of those guys, stayed up all night, go to bed at 5 o'clock in the morning after working all night, had small kids. So it worked out really well that way. But then along the way, I kind of just, switched my schedule. So I'm more of a, morning person now anyway. So, it works out pretty well.
What are some of the other challenges that you faced as a freelance artist as opposed to being like a salaried 9-to-5 artist?
Well, since I do a lot of traveling, finding the time to get things done. That's the biggest challenge, I think.
So how do you juggle it all?
Oh, it's different every week. But the best thing to do is, just sort of stay organized and, you know, maintain a decent calendar with all your deadlines and things on it, so you can kind of keep track and see what's coming up. I've always been kind of guilty of like over assuming how much I can get done and how much time I can get it done. I can't say, you know, like the fastest guy around either. So, you know, kind of learning that and trying not to mess that up as much as I possibly can.
You're well known for going to events and getting to know the fans and things like that. Do you enjoy that interpersonal communication with the people who like your art?
You have to. I know there's a few guys out there that don't do it that much. And honestly, I don't, you know, I don't know if they're exactly people, mm-hmm. people, persons, right word, I don't know, or not. But on some level, if you do it on a regular basis, I mean, you kind of have to like and appreciate the people you're doing it for, because essentially you are there to, I guess, work for them or, you know, make them happy. I guess when you go and you travel and you do these events, I mean, they're the clients, so.
Do you get any strange requests when you're on the road?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Tell me about them.
It varies. So, like, the last one, Sacramento, I signed some guy's head. and then also you'll find people that discover things that they didn't know that you would do, mm-hmm. Or didn't think that you would absolutely say yes to. And then all of a sudden it becomes a thing and then you're just doing the whole event. So like someone, hey, can you draw this character from League of Legends? Well, I don't know. I have a smartphone. I'll take a look. And so I just started drawing it. And it's like there, but you know, everybody else there with just started freaking out. It's like, oh my God, you can draw the League of Legends stuff. So then they started giving me, you know, assignment after assignment after assignment, or like altering cards. I mean, I don't necessarily just alter my own cards. I alter other cards because I kind of look at other people's possessions. And essentially what I'm assigning is I'm assigning the altar anyway. And I'm not covering the other artist's name, heaven forbid. And it's kind of a nice little fun thing to do. So most people don't know that I'll actually do that. So once they discover that, it's like, you know, then I start seeing that throughout the whole event because they go around, they show their friends and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Are there things fans do at events that you sort of wish they wouldn't?
I don't know. I will say that in some sort of sense, you kind of have to have a thick skin, but you can't take everything personally. Mm-hmm. Trying to find a good way of putting it. You know, not everybody has the greatest interpersonal skills ever known to man. You know, I try to do the best I possibly can, but you can't expect everybody to sort of, you know, I don't know what the right word is. And also say like with an art director too, you can't expect them to actually know how to relate to other people or other things like that. So you don't take everything personally. Mm-hmm. And I think when you kind of get to that point where you're just kind of comfortable being there, making people happy and doing whatever you can, and also understand that not everybody will be happy, that you just have a much better experience, I guess.
Mm-hmm. One of the questions I've been meaning to ask you, RK, is you're a father, you have three kids.
Yep.
And you said the middle boy is an artist.
He is.
Okay. And one of the things I always love hearing celebrities get asked, like let's say if they're a singer or an actor or a performer, is when somebody says to them, what would you do if your child wanted to be a singer or wanted to be an actor? what was your reaction when your middle boy came to you and said, Dad, I want to be an artist?
Well, there's that little twinge of pride, but then there's also that little twinge of, oh God, I know what, you know, this industry actually requires. And I don't know if I'd actually wish that on another person. So, I don't know. I guess it's a little bit of confliction. So I love the work that he does, and he's really good at what he does. He has like strengths in areas that I don't. So, I mean, I can look and appreciate absolutely what he does. And, you know, he keeps working on it, keeps getting better. So I guess in that sense, I really don't have any complaints. But then again, you know, it's not the greatest industry to be in. So in the sense that, you know, work isn't always steady and, you know, the state of the market right now isn't the greatest in the sense that the world has kind of opened up and, you know, you can get freelance work cheap and, you know, like, you know, Eastern Europe and China and just, you know, it's the world has opened up a lot more than it had been opened when I had started. So it's not an easy place to start this kind of thing anymore.
Are you able to give him any honest criticism? Like, let's say he does something and you're like, this could be better. Do you tell him that?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, if he wants to hear it, sure, I'll tell him.
Does he take your advice?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But none of your other kids have any intention of being artistic. Is that what I'm saying?
Well, they're all kind of artistic in their own way.
Really?
Yeah, I would say they're all kind of creative. They don't all do like art. Actually, they all kind of do art, and they all kind of do their own art. But each boy is unique and has his own, kind of skill set. Each one's different than the other. I wouldn't classify them as all the same. So I didn't make a bunch of clones.
Three boys, though. That's luck of the draw.
Yeah, well, okay, well, truth be told, I have a daughter on the way, so.
RK Post. Wow.
Yeah, March.
Are you looking forward to your first girl?
Oh, I don't know. That's a little trepidation there. I love her mom to death, but I don't know, two of them. I'll never work that out for me.
I'm sure it's going to turn out great.
Oh, I'm sure I'll be fine. It's just, it's a little fear of the unknown, I guess.
Yeah, I can imagine
Yeah.
that. So, if you suddenly couldn't create anymore, or let's say that your art career did not take off, RK, what would you be doing right now?
I have no idea. I mean, I've done all kinds of things. I've worked for Motorola building cell phones, and I've worked in retail and fast food and all kinds of crazy things getting through school. I don't know. I honestly do like working through my hand with my hands, but I also like doing things you have to, think about a little bit in terms of, like maybe being an electrician or something. I don't know.
Was anything else ever an option for you, or was this something you sort of just knew you were meant to do?
After a while, I mean, the jobs I held while I was in college and raising the family and stuff like that, I wouldn't say that they were the ones that, I could honestly do this for the rest of my life. They were things, that paid the bills and were good for what they were, but weren't those long-term plans at all.
So what is it about doing this that keeps you doing it?
Well, I think I'm pretty well locked in now. I don't know if I have any other skills to do anything else, and I'll be pretty well, pretty darn well screwed if I tried to start something else now at this point.
I guess I'm just, like what do you love about what you do, or what keeps you going? It surely it's not just the money.
Well, no, because I can't say I'm a millionaire or anything. It's the people. It honestly is. So I think that's. I don't have any preconceived notions that I'm famous or anything like that. But when you go into, say, like a GP or a Star City Open or something like that, and there's a room full of people that know who the heck you are, it's fun. It's a little lifting, and you can do things that they'll tell their friends about and they absolutely love, and it's. I don't know. It's a good positive experience. So, I do like getting out and meeting some like-minded people. And I don't have the preconceived notion I'll go home and then anybody should absolutely know who the heck I am. I don't. I go home and it's just I'm home.
You don't go home and say, "I am RK Post."
No. Then I get instantly corrected.
You
I take the
definitely.
garbage out right
What was
now.
that?
No, you're the guy taking the garbage out of here.
I am RK Post taking out the trash.
Yeah, that's me.
Well, I would say you have 5,000 Facebook friends. I would say you're pretty darn popular.
I've accumulated those over time, and who knew that Facebook had a limit of 5,000?
Yeah, I have to say you're the first person I've ever experienced that with, and you actually had to eliminate somebody to make room for me. I was very flattered.
I played some Facebook games for a bit there, so I collected a few friends from that. So I kind of keep them in reserve that if I need to, I could, boot one off or something.
I admit I did brag to my friends a little bit. I was like, RK Post totally unfriended someone for me. Be
I
jealous.
did.
Yeah.
It was some random Asian girl that I had no idea who the heck it was. It was probably from an app because I went through the apps and looked for app requests and stuff like that. I was like, I don't know who the hell that is. So it's probably from a game.
Well, RK, if anybody's enjoyed your appearance on the show and they want to get a hold of you or they want to follow you, how can they do that?
There's a few different ways. There's Twitter at PostRK, Postrk. Tumblr is the same thing, PostRK. Let me see, Facebook, I think it's like arcade post art or art of, I don't know. If you search under arcade post, I think on Facebook you'll find it.
Okay.
Instagram is the same thing, post arcade. Yeah, I'm pretty creative. And then I also have a website where you can buy fun little prints, mats, things like that, sleeves and boxes and stuff, arcadepost.net. But generally, if you just go on Google and you type in arcade post, arcade post art, it'll be like the first thing that pops up.
And what events are you going to be at in the near future?
Well, this weekend I'll be at GP Vancouver.
Eh?
Yes. I'll be driving up. Well, fortunately, I live in the Seattle area, so it's just a 2 hour drive. And let me see, next weekend, okay, I'm going to try to run through this by memory. I have six weeks in a row, and then I'm off for 2 months for the baby, and then I go right back to it again. So let me see. So this weekend is GP Vancouver. Next weekend is the Born of the Gods pre-release in Southern California. I think Palm Desert, if I'm not mistaken. The weekend after that, I'm going to cheat. I'm going to just totally look at my calendar.
Cheat away.
All right. Hold on 1 second.
Sure.
Ooh. There we go. Oh, and my schedule is also on my website too. It's an updated Google Calendar, so it's always up to date. Okay, so yeah, Born of the Gods pre-release Southern California, and then we're going to the Star City Open in Nashville on the weekend of the 8th, GP Mexico City the weekend of the 15th, the Star City Open in St. Louis the weekend of the 22nd, which is also my mom's birthday, and the Grand Prix in Barcelona. That's the last one I'm doing before I take 2 months off.
Barcelona, have you ever been?
Barcelona. Yes, I've been once before, so it won't be like a touristy trip. It'll be me going there, working my butt off. I think I'm also doing the Met for the event too.
Oh, wow.
And yeah.
Very
And
cool.
then I think we pick up the first weekend of May. And let's click, clickety click. The Star City Open in Cincinnati, and then after that is the GP in Minneapolis, and then I'll film the rest of the month. I know as I go along.
I will actually be at the GP in Minneapolis.
You will.
Yes.
All right, stop on by.
Yes, I will be there with several more theories as to what your middle name is.
I can't wait.
I'm just gonna start pulling out an anatomy book and just,
Yeah, and yeah, when you once you figure it out, you go, what body part is that? And I'll pull that and go, oh, exactly.
One more thing I wanted to ask you about. There was mention of you possibly working on a second volume of your book.
Yeah,
What's up with
it
that?
comes around every so often, but it's been 10 years since the last book. I still have, like, I think 20 copies that I found in a warehouse somewhere that I do a sketch each one. I sell them for $50 a pop. But if you look at my prices on half.com and Amazon, that's not a bad price at all. But yeah, eventually I think I'll get around to doing it.
Well, I would
Now,
love to see it.
yeah, but I am aware there's only a certain percentage of magic art that you can put into it, but I've been busy doing, random things here and there that I can easily toss into it over the years. So, especially in the last 10 years.
Maybe have your son contribute.
I could.
There you
He
go.
could write the foreword.
I would love to see that.
I would too.
Well, this has been really, really lovely, Randy. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and I look forward to seeing you at GP Minneapolis and wherever else I can see you.
Absolutely my pleasure.
You're welcome. And if anyone else is listening to the show and you've enjoyed what you've heard here, you can always find the show first and foremost on gatheringmagic.com. You can also find the show on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Subscribe and leave me a positive review. The show is on Twitter at The Duck Tees. I am on Twitter at Original Estrus. And you can always email me personally at estrus@elitistjerks.com. Thank you guys so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.